Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Here in the Allstate Skyline studio, and joining me in studio is William Daley, former Commerce Secretary, former White House Chief of Staff, and currently a candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. Mr. Daley, thank you for joining me.
Good. Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, I always get memories of one of the first shows I ever did and had you on, and that was a campaign for governor that didn't last very long.
About 5.5 years ago. Yep.
I want to just make sure you're in for this now.
Yeah.
but seriously, what, you know, back then you were gung-ho, and then you kind of said you didn't have that global examination of what it would take to do a campaign.
You know, it was a combination of things, Rick, to be frank with you. And my wife kept saying at the time, you don't seem to really be into it. State of Illinois is a great state, a lot of problems, obviously, but I didn't quite get into it. This, when I know this city, I've lived my whole life in this city. There are no parts of this city that are foreign to me. Quite frankly, as I traveled the state back in the summer of 13, it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel comfortable. I didn't have a sense of a feel of the issues and the parts of the state.
It was more global?
Well, the state, you know, I'm a hometown local guy.
Running for governor was more of a...
It was parts of the state that I really didn't have a feel for. And so my enthusiasm for going through that process, obviously challenging the incumbent, Democrat, blah, 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 and lots of people who told me to run then all walked away because of the power of the incumbency and all that. But I never really felt comfortable. This, from day one, because I've lived my life in the city, I know the issues, I know the city, I'm very comfortable with it, and I'm comfortable with the fact that I think I can, hopefully, add to a positive for the future of this city if I'm elected mayor.
Well, I can tell you that being home, kind of recuperating for my shoulder surgery, I've had to watch a lot of TV. I've seen a lot of you.
And
I'm glad you finally shifted the commercials a little bit.
You know, the problem with the, as you know, the media today, there's so many ways people
lots of problems about the media today.
And you waste a lot of money because you have a TV market, at least, that's 9 million people and only about 650,000 vote in a mayoral election. So you've got to expend a lot to affect a lot. So,
well, and obviously the tagline is no more excuses.
Yep.
Explain that to me.
Look, there are lots of people in this race who have been around politics for a long time, in elective office, 20, 30 years, you know, all sorts of things, and they now act like they haven't been there and they're going to solve everything. We've had lots of excuses by the system over the years, whether it's crime, whether it's the economic future of this city. Obviously, the state has its own problems, which are much worse than even the cities. And you've got a lot of people that I think are the public who are really frustrated with the lack of progress. Now, we had 4 years of a battle between the former governor and the legislature where nothing was done and progress was not made on much, if at all. And I think people are fed up with that. We've got a lot of problems. You see the numbers of people moving, the disenchantment with the system. And I think people are tired of the excuses. They just want to see some progress made on some of these issues.
Well, I saw that tagline also as a reference to the current mayor.
Well, no, I'm not. You know what? I'm trying to avoid blaming. Look, there are problems that every mayor, every city councilman, every legislator, every governor has not addressed and solved. So that's the reality of it. Whether it's the pension problem, obviously the crime problem, there's progress being made in some ways. But overall, we had 20 people shot this weekend. I don't see any great outrage by anybody today. I don't see a state's attorney or someone having some press conference or the legislature. I've not seen one word where the legislature is trying to deal with the crisis that is in not only this city around guns, but other parts of the state. So I would hope that that there's a bit of a rage. I've spent a lot of time throughout this city, and people are fed up with the taxes. They're fed up with the crime situation. And if you perceive you have a crime problem, I don't care what neighborhood it is in the city, if you perceive it, then there is a problem there.
I want to talk about taxes because you've talked about, you know, freezing property taxes. Obviously, the city's share of property taxes, I mean, the bulk of property taxes are education related. But, you know, where does the revenue come from? As the city, you know, still needs to deal with issues like its unfunded pension liability.
Right. Look, I've said there has been some stability on the short-term finances of the city, obviously because of rather large property tax increases by Mayor Emanuel, which he saw that as a necessity to stabilize the city, finances of the city. And I do think there, and I've said I will freeze property taxes, and if after the first year I have to raise property taxes in the city portion of this, the budget that I would control the minute I come in for the 2020 budget, then in the second year, if I have to raise property taxes, I would have a dollar cut for every dollar. We have to get serious about our financial problems. I've said also, everything should be on the table, and all the revenue things, but we must address the other side of the table, and that is reform of the pension system. You cannot do that in an honest way unless we change the Constitution. I said this to the Chicago Federation of Labor, so that we could have an honest negotiation, not to put all of the pain on retirees. I don't believe that's the right way to do it. On the other hand, you can't just put the pain on the taxpayers. We have 50,000 retirees, 35,000 present employees in the city. That's 85,000 people. That's about 3% of the population of the city. And that amounts to $28 billion of an obligation on the people who remain here in the city going forward. Many retirees, when they retire, it's their right, obviously, they move. They leave. The rest of the people who are here, or we were trying to get here to move here, have to pay off that obligation, which will go on for years. And we've got to be honest with ourselves and say we cannot have a serious negotiation unless we address this in a way that has to remove the barriers to honest negotiations on the reform of the system and not just look at revenue. As I said, I'm open to, I've named even a commuter tax as a possibility that a lot of people screamed at me about. All I'm saying is all of those things, real estate transfer tax, casinos, marijuana, all of that has to be on the table. But you must address the other side of the table, or else you're just, again, kicking the can, which everyone has done, and the impact of it is only going to get worse.
Well, as I spoke with Representative David McSweeney in the earlier segment, we were talking about, you know, he fashioned some idea of on the Springfield state level of a grand kind of compromise. Again, you know, you can have agreement with unions, but you know, and it all takes is one member to sue.
Well, that's what happened. Mayor Emanuel did a couple of small deals with some unions to try to begin to change it. And I don't think those union leaders were trying to sell out their retirees or their members. I don't believe that. But even those minor attempts were thrown out by the court because of a blanket Supreme Court decision saying basically that you cannot make any changes. So that's the box we're all in. And we either change that box, again, not for the purpose of screwing the retirees, but having an honest negotiation to try to make progress on this problem. Because without progress on this problem, the long-term fiscal future of this city is at great peril.
But can you use a constitutional amendment? We're talking about the pension protection clause, which prevents which says that pensions are a contractual obligation, cannot be diminished or impaired. But even if a constitutional amendment were to get through to change that or get rid of that clause, it would be prospective, wouldn't it? You couldn't affect current benefits.
Well, that's a question that would have to be litigated, obviously. And again, I'm not one who believes, because I think the vast majority of people, obviously, who have worked for government and are on pensions, they have a right, and we have an obligation to them for their service. Now, the truth is, when these rather compared to the private sector, benefits were given to public employees. It was at a time when their salaries competitive.
Yes, it was a disparity that was kind of, you took the cheaper salary in public service because that was your parachute.
Now a third of the city employees make over $100,000. Okay, so that reason for having that system is changed dramatically. And those unions and those people who obviously work for the city want those higher salaries. But we can't do it all. And, you know, what's also different about government, as we all know, as opposed to the private sector, is people go into government and as soon as they join, they expect to be there for 20, 30 years. And that's not the case in a dynamic changing economy like we have today in everything but government. And I think there's got to be a look at that and say, how do you get fresh people into government without the idea that, okay, once I get there, I'm there for at least 20 years, if not 30 years. And that's some sort of contractual, seemingly obligation. The economy and the world is too, and young people especially, most of them have 3, 4, 5, 6 different jobs in their lives. They don't just go and sit at one job for those dynamic, innovative people that we need.
It sounds like a term limit on length of employment.
You know, I'm not saying there ought to be a term limit, but I think we ought to look at sort of government. One of the things I'm trying to do, Rick, is say the government basically is structured as it was at the first half, at least the first half, if not earlier, than the last century. That's why I propose changing the size of the city council. I've said we ought to think about combining CPS and city colleges. Look at doing things differently, because I think we're almost a quarter of the way through the 21st century and living with structures that were basically created at a very different time in our country is ridiculous, because no industry, no companies are still structured as they were, except government, at the first half, if not the first quarter, of the last century.
We're speaking with William Daley, candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio with Bill Daley, candidate for mayor of Chicago. Your TV ads stress the idea that the prosperity of the Loop has been reserved largely for the Loop and has not reached out to many of the city neighborhoods. How do you incentivize, how do you encourage that development?
I would just expand it a little. It's not just the Loop. When you go near west, near south, now,
understood, but you use the term loop specifically.
Yeah, because I think that's how people identify, you know, the progress when you look at the shiny buildings. There's no doubt the disparity between the economic boom in some parts of the city, namely down here, and south side, west side, which for 50 years has been basically abandoned in many ways, even though there are bright spots happening. I think there's a combination of two things. One, I've laid out an attempt to using economic opportunity funds and working with the private sector. Those are massive funds that have been raised around the country for investment in economic opportunity zones as a result of the Trump. You've got the earned market tax credits. You've got other incentives, TIFs, and the extra TIF money that Emmanuel set up in a fund to use to invest. But the real question is, how do we incentivize, and some of those things do, the private sector to go into parts of the city and help revitalize them? I was with Bobby Rush yesterday out in on 79th Street.
Who recently endorsed me.
And with a community meeting and a number of people sitting there talking about how do we get entrepreneurship back. You know, we had about 400,000 African-Americans leave over the last 40 years. The heart of the middle-class black moved to the suburbs. Now, they weren't allowed to move to the suburbs before the early 80s. That's reality. But you had so many businesses. You had the Johnsons, John Johnson, George Johnson. You had Jacoby Dickens. You had insurance businesses owned by black Southside entrepreneurs. We've got to try to recreate and help young people recreate that entrepreneurship and get young African Americans, college graduates, entrepreneurs back into the city, into the neighborhoods where maybe their parents or grandparents lived, and try to find a way to support them, how to get capital to them and invest in them and work with the business community. I spent the vast majority of my life in the private sector as opposed to most of the candidates who are either career politicians or people who have been government employees, bureaucrats, whatever, servants, public servants. Most of my career has been in the private sector. So I think I have a understanding of the business community, and I think we've got to approach them in a way and say, look, we have to view a challenge of making this city more inclusive, wherever the jobs are. You know, some people say, oh, you just got to put jobs out in certain neighborhoods. We've got to make people able to do the jobs wherever the jobs are, and especially the younger people be ready for that. That's one of the reasons I talk about joining CPS and community colleges, to get kids trained for the jobs of the future, as opposed to we celebrate the fact that more CPS kids are going to college, but only 18% finish a four-year college in 6 years. So those who don't, what are they left with? Probably a lot of debt and no real skills to go in and get a job. And there's plenty of jobs today, and the expectation of the future is with an associate degree and the right training, these young men and women can be ready for these jobs of the future. And those who want to finish 4 years, go on to be brain surgeons and lawyers and doctors and everything else, they will do that. And they have that talent, those who do, and the ability. But the vast majority of us aren't in that level, to be frank with you.
You touched on the economic opportunity zones, and that's something also Representative McSweeney talked about in the earlier segment. But I'm not seeing how that's either at the state or city level about the activity there.
No, we have not seen. Now, it's relatively new. It just was part of the Trump tax bill. And I'll tell you, nationally, there's hundreds. I talked to one of the big developers who has a fund. He's out now in California doing economic investments in economic opportunity zones. So I've met with him and said, what do we do here? What has to be done here to support those? And not just investments in office buildings or apartment buildings. We have to find a way, and I'd love to work with Senator Booker and Senator Scott, who were the architects of the economic opportunity. How do we help bring manufacturing? I've laid out a plan for advanced manufacturing, and not just focus on either retail or apartment buildings or office buildings.
The infrastructure part. I mean, that's what's been talked about.
But the infrastructure,
you got to have that.
But the city can provide that. But what has to happen is the private sector has to come in. The city obviously can put some seed money in infrastructure, or use eminent domain, which I'll be very happy to use if it's a project that can really change an area and help an area grow and change from what it may have been for the last 50 years. So I think we've got to be very creative and very aggressive on trying to make the billions of dollars that have been invested in economic opportunity funds around the country focus here in Chicago. And what is it that we have to do to entice them to do those investments here as opposed to in California or some other city?
One last thing, and obviously the Daily Name is synonymous with Chicago. Is there daily fatigue?
There are plenty of people who have an honest question about that. All I can ask, Rick, is my career is very different than my brother or my father. They were career politicians, all due respect to that decision they made. I took a different path. All I can ask people is to judge me as to who I am and what I've done and what I'm laying out. I think people are fair in Chicago. I love this city. We've spent our whole life here. Kids, grandkids, all of that, like so many families. I'm concerned about the future, and at this stage of my life, I'm not doing it for another job or run for another office. I'm trying to be helpful to the city because I love the city and want to be part of improving it.
That's William Daley, candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.